offensive than Mandingo. More shocking than Behind the Green Door. More erotic than Deep Throat.
Hi, this is Herb Katz, and welcome to Dial-A-Dork, the Cleveland radio home for nerds, geeks, and dorks. For the next hour, we'll take your calls about your crashed computer, your hung-up software, your level 17 paladin, or whatever geek-worthy topic you have in mind. Call us at 216-578-1300 and let the Dial-A-Dork community assist you. And now, here's your Cleveland dorks.
I just wanted to say that I'm a nerd.
Y'all ready for this? Welcome to Dial-A-Dork, everyone. My name is Irv Katz. I am here live in my basement when I should be watching the Cavaliers and or the Cleveland Indians. Well, actually, forget the Indians for now. They're not playing very well. And they're going against the Red Sox tonight with Curt Schilling on the mound. It's just probably not a good thing going on over there. Meanwhile, the Cleveland Cavaliers have blown their early first quarter lead and are now in a dogfight with the Washington Wizards in Game 2. I am joined tonight by my cohorts, Matthew Menar, a.k.a. Dork Almighty.
You know, I had all kinds of funny things to say, but, you know, that sports intro on a dork show just totally blew me away.
Well, I'm just sorry. We're in Cleveland, and it's a big moment. And there are plenty of sports dorks, as we've talked
That's true.
On the show. I'm also joined tonight by Dewey the Answer Man, Drew Ivan.
Hello.
We need to get Drew a mic stand.
That's not a bad idea.
So that he can type while he's, talking into the microphone.
I agree 100%.
Okay, we'll get on that.
Tonight.
I have a question before we start.
Holy shit.
Does anyone know Alison Moore? Because I'm getting tons of spam with Alison Moore.
I'd like to know Alison Moore.
Wait a minute, you mean Ellison Moore or Alison Moore?
A-L-Y-S-O-N-M-O-O-R-E.
I think the usual ones I get are from, like, Sandra something or other, and the other ones are, like, Holly and Christy.
I've never seen them.
Oh, Candy sends me stuff all the damn time.
I get a lot of stuff from a lot of people. And it's always different every time, you know? And it's always these weird, bizarre names designed to defeat my Bayesian filters, you know?
What's a Bayesian filter?
A Bayesian filter was developed by Jean-Jacques Bayes. Actually, it was developed by Joan Baez. And
Joan Baez, nice.
Bayesian filter. No,
I hope everybody out there got that joke. Please.
All I know about Bayesian filters is that they are some sort of algorithm used to defeat spam. Some sort of, I guess, learning system.
And I could be wrong about this. Somebody was a Scottish statistician. No, statistician. And
you mean some pantyless kilt-wearing Scotsman?
If you are a Scottish lord, then I am Mickey Mouse.
Yes, by statistician I mean kilt-wearing pantyless. What was it?
Scotsman.
I think he was the Scottish guy. He was a statistician who figured out how to use math to classify things. And that's...
Like, we're number one?
Like, this is spam and that's not.
Like the Dewey Decimal System.
Oh, right, because the Bayesian filters apply a score to spam based on rules. So
statistical rules that go back to the stuff he developed. So I don't know the whole story. Wikipedia does, and so I'll check that out while you talk.
If the number of I'm trying to, you know, pose things to you, like the various types of things it might look for are number of recipients. You know, if there's a lot of recipients, it might instantly say, I'm going to instantly score it X number of points on the spam scale. And then you set on your Bayesian filter, like there's a free plugin for Outlook called SpamBayes. And you can either teach it right away or you can just let it learn over time or both. And, you know, I think you can even set the thresholds for not only how it scores certain things, but at what point does it call something spam. So, I mean, you can say, like, well, don't worry so much about too many recipients, but if you see the word sex, drugs, or
Viagra,
rock and roll in the subject
Cialis.
Line, you know. Yeah, if you see Cialis.
Enhancement.
But then what happens is that they'll spell Cialis with a numeral 1 instead of the I, and then the filter is kind of defeated.
Or spaces in between the letters.
Spaces in between the letters.
Or it seems like they put a lot of either random words or like clips from quotes of like books and stuff in the message to make it look like legitimate text.
I think they use like a random sentence generator.
Yeah, it works pretty good. It mostly gets through mine.
It really does, because it uses a lot of words that aren't like dirty or anything. Yeah, you know, and so I get these emails that are just if you actually take the time to read one of these, they're actually quite funny.
Oh,
because
yeah,
they're so blessedly random. It's
you know about spamusement, right?
Spamusement?
Well, that in English offer loads of entertainment value.
Yeah, spamusement is this guy takes a random, a subject line from a spam he gets, and he makes it into a cartoon, and they're pretty funny.
Oh, that's cool. So is that
spamusement.com? Maybe .net. Let me look.
It'll be at the blog.
That's great. I like that.
But you know what?
That's also like duty.com? D-O-O-D-I-E, I think, was a website where this guy every day would make a new little, about 5-second animated cartoon of a guy taking a dump. But it was always something crazy. Like, he would be on his knees, and his ass would be up in the air, and he would shoot this duty out of his butt, and it would kind of go up in the air and make like a couple of flips and then land right back in his butt. And he would kind of, like, look at the camera and smile, and then he would just go – it would just repeat over and over again. And he always gives it these weird little titles. You know, each one has a strange little title.
That's really mature.
It's really, really stupid, but I got a big kick out of it.
Oh, it's a failed anal cannon.
What? You talking about the guys who, the guy who got the gerbil stuck in his ass, and his buddy, during the blackout, lit the match to see what was happening, and the buildup of gas ignited from the match flame and shot the gerbil out of his ass so hard it broke the other guy's nose, who was kind of like peering in there to see what's going on. That's your gerbil cannon, I think.
That won't be in the show notes.
That's your ass cannon. No, you could you know what, Dewey, you could put a link to Snopes.com on that.
Yeah, really.
So Thomas Bayes was in the 1700s. He was born in London.
Wait, they had spam back then?
No.
Yes, it's called spam.
He didn't develop it.
Spam.
No, what he would do is he would score the message of the town crier. You know. No, stop listening. It's spam. I declare it's spam.
No.
Oh. No?
Okay. All right. What happened? Well, we're sorry.
He was working on it for a completely different reason. I'll put the links in the show notes. I'm not going to sit here and read the Wikipedia to you.
Well, just give us a taste of what he did.
I can't. It's too
summarize.
Much to read.
Come on.
Do it.
Skim and summarize.
Do it.
Okay. Bayesianism is the tenet that...
I'm already bored.
Yes.
Really, folks, we don't have ADD, we promise.
You can use probability to estimate the degree to which a person believes a proposition, or to which perhaps an email client believes that something is spam or not.
So, in other words, are they using his actual technology, or are they just dedicated it to him? They just gave it the name?
No, I think they probably used research that he did. I mean, you know, these guys make, you know, mathematical theorems with a lot of Greek letters in them. And those get used for centuries and centuries. And one application of those, you know, the applications that come out of it might not be, you know, obvious to whoever invented the theorem or discovered it. It might not be until 300 years later when someone invents email and finds an application for it. So yes, I think they applied his theorems to the problem of deciding what's spam and what's not.
All right, cool. What it comes down to is that could be a Dork Almighty's free software of the week. Which it would be SpamBase. If you use Outlook, you can get a plugin called SpamBase, and it's a free spam fighting solution.
But the Dork Almighty does not endorse Microsoft products.
It's not a Microsoft product.
It's a plugin for Outlook, which is a Microsoft product, which is therefore evil.
It's written
now,
in Python.
You're a dope.
Now, if you want to talk about something that is good in the world, let's talk about Spam Assassin.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Spam Assassin. Well, why don't we just go all the way and get a Barracuda?
Spamacuda?
No, just get a Barracuda,
with a heavy?
And that's what the guys over at ZoobleBooks.com were contemplating.
Oh,
getting.
See, there you go.
Because they are getting, you know, thousands upon thousands of... Yes, a Barracuda.
It's a kind of fish, right?
Well, yes,
it can
it is.
Be. It can be.
And that stops what again?
spam. It stops spam.
Got it.
It's a fish with lots of teeth. And it eats spam for breakfast.
It loves spam. Okay, no, seriously, the okay. Barracuda is like, it's a, you know, a rack-mountable hardware spam fighter.
Appliance
that you plug into your network. You open up, you either port forward the mail to this box and then point the mail server to the box as well to get it at it that way, or you change the IP address, you know, your MX record to point to that particular device.
Sure, use
what's
it
an MX record?
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus. It's like a DNS record.
Oh, good Lord.
Mail servers.
It is, and actually it's interesting because MX records are fascinating. You can have a number of MX records for one particular, you know, web domain or, you know, one domain.
It automatically implements a load balancing scheme in that circumstance.
It not only does it, well, is that true?
Uh-huh.
Or I thought it was simply a failover routine. Saying
that's
like
load balancing of a sort.
Yeah, I guess so. If one pillar is completely gone,
well, think about it.
I thought load balancing implied that, you know, all the servers were all up and running, because otherwise, why do you prioritize? If you're load balancing, why do you prioritize one MX? Because that's what you do with MX records. You have multiple ones and you prioritize them. And so, well, in other words, let's say you have four different, you know, mail servers you can get your mail from.
Well, look at it this way. If one mail server is unresponsive, regardless of the cause, whether it be extreme load on that mail server or it being absent from the interweb,
sure.
Then it's going to go to the next one. Right. In that case, then it's a form of load balance.
My question is, you know, if you give three different MX records the same priority, does it then perform a load balancing scheme?
That is an excellent question.
Because I know that Zone Edit will do round robin A records, which allow you to load balance a website automatically. Yep. It'll automatically load balance a website, I think, by just maybe serializing the requests.
For any of you non-techie people out there, load balancing is simply the concept of more efficiently using hardware to address increasing volume.
Right, but using them all kind of sort of simultaneously, to me, there's like two different ways of thinking of it. You can do failover, which is like if one goes down, it instantly, you know, another one picks up its slack kind of instantly, kind of like raid hard, like a mirror raid or something. Or you can do like true load balancing, which is more akin to like maybe raid 5, which is like all of the servers are working together. You know, each one's getting their share all the time. And if one goes down, the rest really don't notice. They just seem to get a heavier load.
I have to say that you're probably mincing concepts in that.
Am I sauteing ideas?
You're not quite sauteing. It's more of a reduction, I think, that you're doing here.
Reduction.
But all of the concepts you're talking about are forms of.
I think I took your
failover
point
or
and
load
I julienned it to ribbons.
You julienned it.
What I think. But anyway, so
fries.
Matt, what is Spam Assassin? Is it free? Oh.
Spam Assassin is a fantastic utility use with open source or, you know, even commercial email products. And what it does is allow you to implement spam rules at your mail server before it even gets to your inbox, and it learns as well. If anything does get through, you drag a little email into the ham or spam folder. Ham is good, because false positives happen, on occasion.
I think Hawaiians might take a little exception to this whole ham versus spam.
We don't care.
And kosher people.
Well, kosher people don't give a damn. They're both not kosher.
So there's damn, ham, and spam.
For them, there's corned beef and spam. Corned beef is good. Spam is bad.
What about pastrami? Is pastrami kosher?
Pastrami is corned beef,
but it's not.
But it's spiced differently.
Yeah.
It's got a black pepper
beef,
rind, and it's brined differently.
Oh,
but it's
so
I believe
good.
It's the same cut of meat, is it not?
Well, that I don't know.
It seems like it's fattier, so maybe it comes from.
Well,
I'll look it up.
Answer man.
You know what? On the Food Network. All right, so. People probably don't know this, but I'm really into food, and I like to cook and stuff like that. and I never really fully understood where each piece of steak that I might be eating came from on the cow. So I went out looking for a map that says, you know, where does the prime rib come from? Where does the strip steak come from and all that kind of stuff? And I found an awesome map on foodnetwork.com. So
oh, excellent.
As a one aside, you know, go check that stuff out.
Have you ever worked with skirt steak?
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's actually, let me tell you
go
this.
Go ahead. It's the stuff you get in fajitas often.
Yeah. But you can get it in larger pieces.
Oh, sure.
And the one thing I had was let's call it a ribbon of skirt steak rolled in kind of like a ho-ho, and the filling was feta and spinach.
Like a roulade.
Like, oh, no. That's not right.
Yeah.
I think so.
A roulade, R-O-U-L-A-D-E.
Is that? Oh,
that's
okay.
When you make, yeah, like a ho-ho or a meat ho.
It's a meat ho. Not a tube steak ho. It's a meat ho.
Or is it a ho meat?
It turns out that Irv was right.
Oh, no.
The main difference is that, close.
Okay.
It looks like you start with corned beef, you brine and flavor it, then
about
smoke it.
Well, okay, corned beef is what?
You start with corned beef, then you brine, flavor, and smoke it.
Smoke it?
To get pastrami. That's what it says.
Smoked corned beef is pastrami.
See, pastrami, in my opinion, is far superior to
corned
beef.
Well, but corned beef is brined.
Well, it's not clear from this article. It says, the main difference is that after the meat is brined and flavored, smoking it turns it to pastrami. So that doesn't really,
are you getting this
clear
information from Food Network or not?
No, Food Network didn't have
is
a
Is he
good,
getting it from Wikifoodia?
Gilroy Dispatch.
Yes, the authority. I've never even heard.
Never even heard.
Gilroy Dispatch sounds
good.
The
ultimate
another YWOW
dork is Alton Brown. The guy is fantastic.
Yeah, he's great.
He is awesome.
And he's the one who did a skirt steak show, and he talked about how, you know, when you have to cut it against across the grain.
Wow.
And he did a thing where he took he cut like 25, like 3 foot long segments of garden hose, and he made a big bundle of them, and he wrapped it all in cellophane, like wrapped the outside in cellophane. So it was like this like just big thing of tubes, all right, big
okay.
Thick thing of tubes. And he was like, he showed that if you cut across the grain, and it was supposed to mimic the grain of the meat, you know, he was like, if you try to like kind of like bite into these things, if you cut with the grain, it'll be very, very chewy. But if you cut really short and across the grain, it'll all just kind of break apart in
nice.
Your mouth.
Nice. So that's fantastic
advice. And then
he
cooked them directly on the coals of his barbecue.
Really?
But he's so anal, he took a hairdryer first and blew off all the ash.
Well.
He's like outside with a fucking hairdryer.
So what?
So then he laid him right on the coals because he said that because the marinade drips off of it and there's some fat there, you don't want any flame ups because it's thin and you don't want all that flame. So the way to eliminate the flame ups is just put it right directly on the heat source, and there's no oxygen under there for the flame up.
Man, I gotta get some of his DVDs or something.
Yeah, that's a really cool episode.
That dude's awesome.
Because skirt steak is actually really, if you go over to Brazza Grill,
yeah,
and you get the skirt steak over there, it's fabulous, fantastic. Because that's the thing, like some of the steaks you get over there are, because the way they cook them and everything, they get a little overdone.
A little
or
bit.
They get, maybe they get a little dry sometimes. I'm talking about the Brazilian barbecue. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's never been to a Brazilian barbecue or doesn't know about it, maybe Dewey will put a link in there for
Brazza.
You can put like charascura, I think is the name of that Brazilian gaucho style of serving food. You can put Brazza Grill or Fogo de Chão.
Fogo de Chão.
Which I went to. You lived in Atlanta for a while,
yeah,
right?
I've been
I went
there.
To the one in over by the mall with the Needless Markup and all the other stores.
Lenox Mall.
Lenox Mall.
Yep.
Yeah. Needless Markup.
Linux
that.
Mall?
Lenox. Not Linux.
Not Linux.
A Linux Mall would, you know, Matt would probably just go get a job there.
You know, it's an interesting comment, and we'll have to talk about this on another show, but where does the balance exist between finding a job that you truly love and would enjoy doing and really just having one that helps you, meet your
you
financial
been
goals? Extracurricular
you should have been at Nauticon when Irv and some dude had a 32-hour conversation about whether it's better to be a corporate bitch or to be your own bitch.
Yeah, well, I guess I should have. I apologize for missing that.
Well, you should actually.
It was an interesting conversation.
You shouldn't apologize for missing it. What you should apologize for is not having listened to it later, seeing as how it's been available for a really long time. And Drew put some of it on the Nauticon wrap-up podcast that he posted last week. So what do you have to say for yourself now?
My iTunes was broke.
You jerk. Okay, so anyway, so back to so let me ask you a question though. I mean, spam assassin, great. You put it on your server, and so it attacks spam at the server level before you ever see it in your inbox. But what if you get something it thinks is spam, but you actually wanted it? What do you do? How do you get it back?
Well, that's
how do you even know you ever got it?
That's why I was talking about the ham and spam. In this particular circumstance, you can access two folders that just happen to be named ham and spam, or the third one is junk. Let me start over. Here we go. Formulate my thoughts.
On the air, dude.
All right.
Just sound them out, baby.
Just let it all out, man.
Just figure it out while talking. That's the secret.
Totally.
Because we're not going to sit here silently while you think, and neither will the audience.
All right, well, I'm done thinking. Okay, so there is a folder called junk, and that's where all possible spam goes to. If you check that every now and again, you will notice maybe something that wasn't spam. If it is not spam, you drag that message from the junk folder to the ham folder, and that trains the spam assassin Bayesian filter to recognize that type of email is
Bayesian filter. Incidentally, you said ham folder, and that reminds me of one of my favorite slang terms for vagina, which was ham wallet. Ham wallet. Which I thought was just hilarious.
Boys have a
but
penis,
ham folder is ham folder's pretty good.
Ham folder.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. Anyway.
Isn't that kind of like now, sausage in a blanket?
No, I don't think so. Like we're look, man.
All right.
Look, man. Oh, by the way, Tim Wurzel is listening. Let's give the shout out to our man T-Dubs up in the D.
Did you see we also had some questions from a listener?
Yeah. We have a couple of listener questions, in fact, and we will get to them shortly. We've got some from Nate Allen as well.
Is that
two people? Nate and Allen somebody?
No, it's just Nate Allen. He's a guy without a last name.
He gets two questions?
We have questions from Nate Allen, and we have questions from Tim Wurzel.
Nate is an erstwhile dork. He's a dork at large.
He's a paradork.
A paradork, yes.
A paradork?
Well, we're trying to convince him to
trans dorker. All right, look, the what I want to say to you, though, is do you suggest that somebody take the time to figure out how to implement Spam Assassin on their mail server, or do they just go out and spend the $1,500 on the low-end Barracuda, thereby offloading all of this spam filtering stuff onto another device and not leaving the mail server to deal with it? For instance, not to mention the fact that the Barracuda can be configured to deliver to each mailbox a digest type email of emails it has filtered, and then you can whitelist things, blacklist things, so on and so forth.
Well, you formulate your thoughts. Let me just point out that transdorker.com is available.
Oh, good.
Want to register that?
I gotta think it over.
Okay. Ready?
Transdorker.
I was just trying to think what the sound effect would be for a transdorker transmogrification.
Ow, my glasses.
Yeah, that's good.
I lost my inhaler.
Wait, you guys.
I think we could probably talk for a good amount of time about the various decision points necessary to make a good decision about what you're talking about.
Ah, come on.
But let's boil it down.
That was the most convoluted sentence.
Spam assassin free. Barracuda $1,500.
Let's boil it down to a couple.
Spam bays,
but
free also. And if you're not somebody who's running your own mail server, you're going to need something at the client level like spam bays.
You got to lose yourself in the music.
The music, the moment.
You want it. You better never let it go.
We'll call this, like, instead of 8 mile, it'll be like 8 meg.
That was a riot. Herb's going off on his little soapbox and his hands up in the air.
Well, you were doing it too. You did like
don't
the...
Don't be laying that on me.
No, 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 wait. You did the crazy professor thing. You went like, Bayesian builder. You know, you did like the she blinded me with science.
Science.
Science. You
know, okay. That girl was hot.
Yeah. That Chinese chick in the video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Miss Sakamoto?
It's in the song.
Is that what it says?
You're beautiful.
Miss Sakamoto, where's my happy ending?
Whoa.
What?
That'll be in the blog as well.
Yeah. Sure. My happy ending?
Yeah.
Taken with Drew's Apple camera. Okay, let's move to some user questions.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second.
No?
Let me just at least summarize here. The decision, the boiled down
summarize,
decision.
Summarize. Sunset.
R. Yes. Cost and then just skill level of your IT person. If you don't have one, buy an appliance because it's just in the long run going to be easier for you. But if you have one that has even a modicum of skill
or a modicum,
make them do the work, help them educate themselves and do this for you.
Help me help you. Help me help you.
We should have Dewey cook up some statistics for how many movie references we do in a show.
Dewey cook the books.
29.
It's already
42.
Done. Dory.
Dory.
By the way, oh my God, I can't believe we're half an hour into the show and we haven't mentioned that our cast member, Dr. J, the science gay, who's not gay, is now a father of a beautiful baby girl.
And
congratulations, Dr. J.
He's on maternity leave this week.
He's on maternity leave indeed. And you know what, guys? You know, the rigors of parenting may force him to miss quite a few more shows, but we do wish him all the luck in the world. We're very happy for him, and we welcome him back whenever. Although I have to say that at our last studio show, I was a little concerned that he and Drew might get into a fight. Because he got really drunk,
no
and he
way.
Was being a total shit. No offense there, buddy, but you know it. You know it. I know it. The American people know it.
Me or him?
No, James.
Oh,
he
no.
He went next door and threw down two dirty martinis from Sage in about 20 minutes at about 7:30. And then he came over and he was just plowed. But his wife was about to go into labor like within the next few days. So it was...
That's nothing.
I think he needed it. But anyway.
I don't know. I think I'd have to lay odds. Hold on. I think I'd have to lay odds on Drew on that one.
Oh geez, I said they were. They almost. I thought they might because at one point Drew looked at James and goes, "How is it that you haven't gotten your ass kicked like a million times?" And because he says then James's response was, "Because I only fuck with my friends." So
he's a wise man.
Yeah, he is. Hey, but Matt, real quick. I mean, what do you do if you're running like let's say a non-Linux? What the hell are you looking at, dude? You're obviously not listening to my fucking question.
He's like a cat.
I know. He's like,
have ADD, okay? I heard your question. If you're not running,
what if you're not running a Linux-based mail server, or what if you're running Exchange, or maybe some other weird Windows-based thing? Or
well, you know, to answer that question, not all free software is just built for Linux. You know, Mozilla
what I'm saying is
and
what
Thunderbird
if,
were built for Linux. You know, but
what
they're
I'm
on
saying,
Windows.
Matt, is how is
if
there
you can,
is Spam Assassin a Linux or Unix only thing,
no.
Or is there a Spam Assassin for Exchange, or are there Spam Assassin implementations for Exchange, and or are there mail servers that have Spam Assassin built into them?
Let me table.
What
that.
Is Spam Assassin?
Let me table,
just
hold on a second. Jeez,
a standard.
Man.
I mean, what the hell is
it's
it?
It's not a standard. It's an add-on for a mail server. But let me table that so that I can get the answers to all those many questions and get back to you with truthful statements next show.
Okay, fine.
All right, so we'll just table that for a moment.
Okay. Hey,
okay.
Move on to user questions.
Move on to user questions.
Let's start with Tim. We have a new segment in the show. It's called Tim Wurzel's Unanswerable Questions of the Week.
That's a good segment.
Yeah, and so let's see. He says, my iPod keeps shutting off after playing a podcast, but only podcasts, and only when I let it play all the way through. If I stop it early, it doesn't shut off. It only started doing this in the past week, and I updated to the latest firmware when it was released last month. Suggestion? Wait, let me guess. Bare metal it.
There is iPod Linux, which you could bare metal the iPod for and then install that in. There
yes,
you go.
I'm sure that'll be trouble-free.
You know, I looked for answers to this question on the interweb, and I couldn't find anything in particular.
I actually sent Tim an email with some responses on that one, and I found a site called iPodLounge.com, which had several threads about iPods crashing while playing non-standard media.
What is non-standard media?
I could never get a straight answer out of the forum about what that meant, but I'm guessing that something that we produce, a la podcasts and that kind of thing, aren't. I don't know.
Well, so I can tell you this: it treats podcasts as audiobooks, and the cool thing about audiobooks is that if you stop listening to it and go listen to something else and then come back, it picks up where it left off. It like bookmarks where you left off and starts there when you press play instead of starting at the beginning.
This
of the track.
Is something that the iTunes software does to
the iPod.
The
iPod does it.
The iPod.
Well, I mean, how
it.
Does the iPod know that? I mean, isn't a podcast just an MP3 or something?
A podcast is an MP3, but
well, it doesn't have to be.
Well, I'm saying, but isn't it typically?
It could be a WAV or it could be any
could it
media
be a FLAC. Or an AAC or a OGG Vorbis.
I don't think iPod can play OGG or or FLAC.
Well, what I'm saying is the typical podcast is just an MP3 that's then the link to it is embedded inside of an RSS
yes.
feed.
And so right? you get the MP3 onto your iPod, and the iPod remembers what point you were at in the MP3.
But is that something that the iTunes software does when moving file over? I mean, because does it do that with regular songs too?
No, only audiobooks and podcasts.
See, that's what I mean. The iPod handles podcasts as different media than like just songs. And there seems to be some technical issues with it surrounding those. There were several threads that I pointed out to Mr. Wurzel, and unfortunately none of them had solid answers.
Here's something you can try though. If you're getting your podcast through iTunes, go into the podcast directory and pull the file out of the podcast section and put it into a regular playlist or into your library.
Right. So take it out of the audiobooks.
Right.
And so put it in the.
Then it's not a podcast anymore, as far as iTunes and iPod is concerned.
Just regular audio file.
And see if that fixes it.
But if you stop in the middle, you're just gonna have to queue your way up to where you left off manually.
Yes, and the other thing is iTunes manages your podcasts automatically, so it can remember which ones you've listened to and automatically delete them next time you sync. And that way, you only have the unlistened to podcast. That's what I like about letting it manage podcasts.
Okay, but the problem is if you move it out into the regular folders,
it won't do that anymore.
It won't do that?
Right, it's just an MP3 at that point. It's any other song.
So it'll think you haven't listened to it yet because it's not in the folder?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So okay. It will leave it there indefinitely.
Wow, the Cavs are playing like just shit. We're only down by one, though, so. All right, next question. I think there's some answers there. I mean, it could be just this sort of nascent audiobook thing that's causing a problem with the particular podcast,
Yeah, and it can be. Here's another thing it could be. Sometimes when you publish the podcast, you have to tell the RSS stream how many bytes are in the MP3.
Ah.
And if that doesn't match the, because not every RSS maintainer is good about making sure that every detail.
Why are you looking
feed,
at me?
Because you maintain our RSS.
Well, I do a very bad job. I kind of round it off.
Yeah,
I thought that was just to, to give you the updating thing about when you're downloading it. Like,
I'm not sure.
20% downloaded, 30% downloaded.
I'm not 100% sure.
Because I don't ever do that exact.
Because
it's a lot of numbers. It's like 9 digits.
I know. It's
you only have
worse
10
than
fingers.
A phone number.
Or no, I mean, I don't know how many digits it is. It's like a bunch, though, man.
I don't know. Bleh.
All right, well, we should make every effort to make our listing in RSS as valid as possible.
Well, I guess I'm curious, is it happening with our podcasts, Tim?
I think he might only listen to the live feed rather than the podcast.
Well, maybe he would consider, downloading one of our podcasted shows from the archives and let us know if it's with us. And then maybe what I could do is if it causes the same problem, maybe I could make the size, entry
right.
completely exact.
We'll troubleshoot this together.
And maybe we could figure that out, because maybe we've been causing iPod crashes all over the world and just didn't know it.
Kumbaya, awesome. Man.
All right, here we go. Oh, this is kind of a physics-y thing.
Yeah, but we're going to take this one anyway.
All right, I know this isn't a physics question exactly, but I've always wondered this. Does the universe end? And if so, what's beyond that boundary? I've read that it's ever expanding, so that leads me to believe that it does end, even if that boundary continues to grow. Also, if it is ever expanding, what is it expanding into? There's got to be something that it is taking over to keep growing. Hold on a second. I have to meditate here.
Anyway, let's see if I can get a harmony here.
Go ahead.
I had to recommend that Tim read The Restaurant at the End of the Universe to answer such questions as these. But when he responded back,
don't recommend that he reads a physics book or something.
I had to respond back when he wrote me back and said thanks. I had to write it back and say, it's not really a scientific novel per se. You know, it's by Douglas Adams. You know, one of the probably best known.
Yeah, but what does it really have to say about his question, or is it just something to say?
About,
if you're
it
thinking
talks
about,
about
it,
what's at the edge of the universe?
All right. Well, look, what I think,
but anyway,
is out there.
We don't care what you think.
No, let me tell you, because I already know the answer.
Is this going to be some religious thing?
No. What's actually out there is the nothing from the Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah.
And as long as the universe keeps expanding, because as long as we keep our imaginations fertile, then it'll keep expanding and fighting against the nothing. But once we all begin to let our imaginations die because we get too old and we get too concerned with worldly affairs, then the nothing will come back in and shrink the universe again. And
so that won't be in the show notes.
I don't fucking know. I have no idea. Nobody does.
So anyway, the real answer to that is, yeah, nobody knows right
now. Unanswerable question.
It's not. Well, it's not unanswerable. There's
bare metal it.
There's a ton of things. Put Linux on this universe.
Linux at the end of the universe. All right, here you go.
Wait.
What? You got nothing.
But there's some good information to be given here. There's a ton of theories surrounding what the heck is the universe doing. Is it expanding? Is it collapsing? Did it have the right combination of mass and energy at the very beginning to cause it to explode into the perfect size? All of this stuff is talked about in a great article on Wikipedia, which we talk about all the time. If you search for Big Bang, there's also several books on the subject, one of which I can say that I've read is The Elegant Universe, and that has some interesting concepts in it as well.
And it has a picture of the universe in a ball gown.
Well, yeah, there you go. I like my universe to be in, you know, leather and lace, but, you know, whatever.
That's not elegant, though.
Can be.
That's hot. Depends. That's the hot universe. The hot universe.
So you remember what Douglas Adams said about the Big Bang? He had that line, Eccentrica Galumbus, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6, said that Zaphod Beeblebrox was the best bang since the big one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Beautiful. See? Wow. Is that like verbatim?
Close.
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
So that's what you can look forward to if you read The Restaurant at the End of the Universe and its prequels.
Stuff like that about Zaphod Beeblebrox, which is a great name.
I don't think it was Beeblebrox.
Was it? It wasn't. You're the guy recommending the book. You don't know the damn protagonist's name.
Was it
Beeble
or
it was Beeblebrox, wasn't it? Zaphod Beeblebrox.
I know it was Zaphod, yeah.
Or was it Paul Muad'Dib?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
All right, so moving on.
All right. The IT guy here at work told me that the Best Buy's Geek Squad is being sued by Winternals for illegally installing and using their software. Didn't know if you guys heard about that one, but I thought it was quite interesting. Yes, we have heard about that, and yes, I believe it's true. I can already tell you, I'm sure it's got to include two very important programs that they have. One is the ERD Commander CD, which is just an absolutely essential part of the Windows repairman's, you know, toolkit, because you can boot into a non-booting Windows environment. You can do a lot of things. You can go back to a restore point. You can change the administrator password. You can edit the registry. You can delete certain files. It's a great way to delete like virus type files that are otherwise never able to delete because they're always friggin' in use, various things like that. And it sort of replaces, or it sort of includes and improves upon the other program called NTFS Pro. NTFS Pro is the sort of, boot to DOS. It's like a boot to DOS set of boot disks, but that gives you NTFS read-write access, which regular DOS does not have. So if anybody's, it's always a welcome relief occasionally when somebody's busted computer that you need to delete a piece of spyware from or something is FAT32, because then you can just get in with a regular, Windows boot disk. But if you need to get into NTFS, you need either ERD Commander or at the very least NTFS Pro. And I bet you those are the two big ones. And those are just phenomenal, just essential pieces of software.
I just have
one. And someday I'll pay for them.
I was going to say, I have one question. Do you actually own legal copies of that yourself?
Absolutely. You better believe it.
Yeah, I have to agree with Herb. I mean, those are solid programs in any troubleshooter's toolbox.
Well, I've never used them.
Well, maybe you've
they're
never
terrific.
Broken. I don't know. I mean, I used to use Norton Disk Doctor all the time back in the Windows 3.1.1
sure.
and DOS
sure.
days.
Norton Disk Doctor, sure. You could boot to that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you put the CD in there, it would boot to that. Yeah.
Well, hell, you could make bootable floppy images out of the program at one point.
Okay.
So.
That was before my time as a repairman. That's the thing.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I do recall that you could boot to Disk Doctor, but it never solved whatever problem that I was facing at those times. Of course, I wasn't very experienced. I didn't know what the hell I
well,
was doing.
Well, back in the Windows 3.1.1 or 3.1 or pre or the DOS days, you didn't have to worry about an NTOS kernel file. Really, you had to worry about your command.com, your EMM386.
Right. Right.
You know, and
indeed.
your config.sys and your autoexec.bat. if you could fix those, you were good to go, and it's all
yeah,
text
pretty much.
Stuff.
Did you say HiMem.sys?
Oh, I forgot HiMem. Good call. Yeah. Good call.
Or like the little those other ones like MS-DOS or IO.sys, MS-DOS.sys, some of those too.
Yeah.
But yeah, command.com was always like, man, it would be like non-bootable disk. Press any key or whatever, and you're like, fuck.
Shit. Damn you, Microsoft.
Okay. Yes, but yeah, it's true. Geek Squad's in a little bit of trouble with that, and I wish the Winternals people all the success in the world. They bleed them dry.
Well, they make a fabulous product. They ought to get paid for it.
Absolutely. We had a present, and it makes those guys look like miracle workers when in fact they're probably whatever.
Well, I mean, you use it, so it can't take that much skill to use. But on the other hand, you do some pretty miraculous things with it, so.
All right, here's the last one. This isn't even a question, I don't think, but we had a presentation today by a custom fixture manufacturing company here at work that we use periodically for our clients. They did the fixtures for the Apple stores, and they don't anymore. Apparently, one of the reasons they stopped was because one of the displays was made 1/64th of an inch short, and Steve Jobs told them to redo it completely. Don't know if you care about that, just thought it was quite interesting. Yeah. And then he ends the letter by saying, thanks for the bare metal suggestions in advance.
Well, we did tell him to bare metal the universe.
Yeah, and bare metal the iPod. And
better bare metal that Apple Store display.
Yeah, well, they did the fixtures for the. I mean, I don't understand. Like, what do you mean
like,
the fixtures?
Lights and
1/64th of an inch.
Yeah, well, Steve Jobs is kind of widely perceived as a pain in the rumpus.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't measure that to 1/64th of an inch. Somebody must have
figured it out
and told him. Because I don't even have a tape measure accurate to 1/64th of an inch. Who the heck measures that accurately? Who?
Who, I tell you,
do
who?
You? I don't.
You know, that's a good question.
I don't.
I have one of those laser measuring things, and
yeah.
I don't even think it does to down to 1/64th.
So they got out the calipers or something, and...
That was a nerd with way too much time on his hands.
Calipers.
Calipers.
I love calipers. On some, what is that? Chicken piccata? It's delicious. Or is that capers?
I'm thinking of calamari.
Oh.
I was thinking of calamari.
Fried calipers.
Fried calipers.
Mmm.
You know, when they're not chewy, but they're just that right level of tenderness with the crispy breading.
The best I ever had was where I used to work in Little Italy, Villa d'Este. They made the most fabulous calamari. It was always fresh, and when you ordered it, they would dip it in the flour just then, season it with a little salt and pepper, and it just came out perfect. And they had a fantastic marinara, so it was just amazing. They had the best tiramisu I've ever had. Also,
that place is that still around?
No, no.
Yeah, that was years ago.
The guy who owned it was actually a guy named Pasquale Catanzanite, I believe was his name. His name that you might know him by is Pat Catan.
You're kidding
me. I'm not kidding.
He didn't found like the Pat Catan.
Yeah.
Like, oh jeez.
He owned this building, I think, and then he opened the restaurant in the building.
Yeah.
And I worked there, and it was a fabulous restaurant. He would come in like once a month, and he would order spaghetti marinara. That's it.
Oh,
they had so many fabulous things on the. I know, but I mean, they had so many incredible things on the menu, and he would sit there and just eat his spaghetti marinara. And smile and leave, and they never said a goddamn thing.
He didn't
tip for shit either.
Well, I'm sad that he didn't say a damn thing.
Of course, he didn't tip because he never actually received a check.
Check, yeah. He just kind of ate. But you know what? We don't talk about Cleveland all that often, and we should plug Little Italy because there's some good restaurants down there.
Yeah, I hear very good things about a lot of those, and there's some new ones, relatively new ones like Battuto. And
Gusto's.
But you know what? I'm noticing that they're the corner that Baricelli Inn is on is a very tough corner.
It is.
The Baricelli is what it is, and it's very well known. And you've got Valentino's Pizza, sort of catty corner, and you know, one door down, and that, you know, that has very, very low overhead, and it's right, you know, right there on South Side, so it's South Side of campus. It's never, I think, going to have a problem. As long as it keeps making good pizza, which it does, in my opinion. Very, very good pizza.
Absolutely.
Very thin crust. Very, very, very good pizza. And this is not a good pizza town, in my opinion. So I think that's very good pizza. And but the place where Teresa's used to be has been closed for years. Mm-hmm. The place across the street from that, which is across from Baricelli also, has been through like five different incarnations in like the last 6, 7, 8 years, and like every time I drive by there, it seems like there's another sign on the door that says "Thank you for your patronage. We are now closed forever." You know, so it's really.
I thought you guys want to say nice things about Cleveland. All you're talking about is all the places that are gone.
I'm just saying that Little Italy's great, but it's just too bad about that one particular corner because it used to have great restaurants there. It had the place that was there when I worked at Villa d'Este was, you know, it was like hot competition between the two places, and both places were full all the time on the weekends, so it was good times. But, you know, then Teresa's, I don't know what the hell's going on, but it's over. Hell, you might as well just go down to Mama Sana's and have a good time. I love their spaghetti.
Really?
I think their marinara is pretty damn good.
Not bad at all. I like the trattoria right next door.
That's not, I think that place is really pedestrian.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
I love sitting out on that patio.
Well, that's
in
cool.
The summer and you know, having a big old bowl of pasta.
Well, there's a lot of patios, and you can get better food.
I don't know if there's a lot of patios down there.
Maybe not there, but you know, in town.
Like where?
Like, you know, over there. Actually, there's like 6 or 7 restaurants in Tremont have patios now.
Tremont, yeah. But
like Parallax.
That's not Little
Italy. Parallax South. Well, I know, but Parallax Southside, Fat Cats, even like Lava Lounge, La Tortilla Felice, Lincoln Park Pub. They all have Edison's. They all have big outdoor. And of course, the Treehouse is not really a restaurant, but they have a huge.
Have you ever had the tacos at Lincoln Park Pub?
as a matter of fact, I've been to Lincoln Park Pub many times for taco night, and all I'll say is don't eat more than two. Don't eat them too fast. Don't and maybe have one beer with each one. I mean, really, you've got to irrigate yourself. Because I literally had heartburn for more than 24 hours, which is ridiculous.
Well,
how can you have heartburn for more than 24 hours?
How many?
I ate 4.
In how much time?
About 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
Tops.
Okay.
With about half of a beer. And it just sat there like a steaming, bubbling, primordial soup of acid in my stomach. And just every opportunity it had to run up my esophagus, it did.
It bested you.
Oh, it defeated me it soundly.
It owned you.
It left me like that knight in the fucking Monty Python on the Holy Grail, you know.
So just
there
a
with
flesh
no
wound.
No arms, yeah. No legs, you know. Actually, you know, he was still confident. I wasn't. I was soundly defeated. I was just dead. Oh, we got a response from Tim Wurzel, by the way. He says it's happening with all podcasts, yours and others as well. And it started to shut off when I back out of the podcast menu, hitting the menu button to get back to the songs. So it's like it seems to be getting worse. And are there like?
Yeah,
any,
you're screwed.
Are there any like viruses or anything for iPods yet?
As far as I know, there's no iPod virus, but I'm pretty sure Apple's got a
it's called the iRus.
Has a decent return policy, and you might want to just trot on down to the Apple store and say this one's effed up and get yourself a different one.
Yeah, I mean, how long have you had it? Well, how long is the warranty? I mean, what are you talking about? Like,
well, I mean, I don't know specifically.
How good is the return? I don't think their return policy is that fucking good.
With like a PowerBook and stuff like that, you take it back within warranty, and they do magic for you.
But the guys there know pretty much what's going on. They've seen problems before. If you take it into the Genius Bar, they'll go through the troubleshooting steps. I think whether it's under warranty or not, they know it's their hardware, and they'll check the settings and the firmware and anything they can check.
I mean, let's admit things here. Apple's a hardware company. They're gonna do what they can to
I don't know if I'll admit that.
Yes, you will.
I'm gonna argue with you on that point.
They're not a software company.
I know.
Oh. All right,
loser.
So, Tim, I think that what we're saying is, I think what we're really trying to tell you is that you probably want to go get some help from somebody who knows more about iPod. Actually, the thing is, bare metal it. Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on with that thing.
You know, I was just reading a comparison between the iPod and the the Zen Media Player.
Sure, Creative.
Zen is starting to look more attractive to me, even though I've wanted to have an iPod forever, since I haven't wanted to pay through the nose for one.
Well, the prices are coming down.
They are, but the Zen will play the Ogg Vorbis format and some of the other stuff, and they're pretty slick.
Sure. Well, I mean, they look pretty cool. I mean, I know that a lot of people are big fans. Are they, those are the ones with just a 5 gig, or are you talking about like a full like 20, 40
gig?
Yeah,
you can get like the big ones.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I still miss my old Rio. Remember when Rio was a brand?
Rio player. Uh-huh.
My old Rio CD player, that portable CD player that played CDRs of MP3s. Mm-hmm. And it could play like for 15 hours on two AA batteries because it would read the entire track into memory, and then it would stop spinning. It would only spin the CD like for like 15 seconds per song.
Nice.
And it would start spinning it up right before the song ended and preload the next song so that it would seamlessly go to the next song. There was no break in between tracks. Cool. Yeah, it was really a great device until one day I turned it on and its cutie pie little LCD readout was just completely cacked and it wouldn't do anything. And I don't recall it, I don't recall it suffering any percussive, damage
did you
of any kind.
Or,
there was I shit canned it, actually, is what I did. But I got my money's, got my money's worth out of it.
Well, hell, I still miss the my Sony Discman that I had way back in the day. That was a solid little device.
Nice. Okay,
so what are we on to
the
here?
Cavs had worked their way out to about a 6 or 7 point lead again after giving away their big lead and having, in fact, the Wizards taking a lead, and now they're frittering it away again. So this game is really back and forth. Just take it. Let's move on to Nate Allen's questions.
Yay.
Or topics, really. Number one is MySpace, which we have discussed before. He goes, I know what it is and what it is for, but is it safe? And by safe, he means technically not safe from is this dude I'm chatting with a psycho point of view. That is using MySpace equivalent to punching the monkey, or is it an okay service that will not get in my way or install junk on my computer? Well, as far as I know, MySpace is, and the Wizards just buried a 3, and they took a 2-point lead. How about that? Anyway, sorry. As far as I know, MySpace is not like a known purveyor of spyware. I don't even know if it has any pop-ups or pop-unders or anything like that. So I don't think it's technically that kind of a problem, as far as I know.
No, technically, I don't think you'll have any problems in that arena. They won't, you know, unless you click on something to go get some spyware, you're going to be okay. They do some pop-up advertising, but Firefox will block that pretty readily. And I have seen on the BugTrack mailing lists, there's been several like cross-site scripting vulnerabilities and that kind of thing. But as long as you're not, you know, a hardcore user, I doubt you'll be running into anything of that sort.
Yeah, I think probably the best word of advice is, you know, be
bare metal.
Well, first bare metal it. Then make sure your virus protection is up to date and running properly, and you know, scanning every web page you go to. Be real careful about the links you follow and the crap you download from people's MySpace pages. Yeah. Okay?
Practice intelligent browsing, and you'll be fine.
Indeed.
Or rather, have your wife practice that.
Or your kids.
No, I don't think they're old enough to do MySpace yet.
Okay. Here's another one. So this is about bandwidth. And he says, you probably have covered this, and if so, my apologies. But anyway, I'm a skinflint. What does that mean? What is a skinflint? I know what a skin flute is.
Mr. Flint.
I don't. What is it?
A skin flute is...
Does it have to do with a ham sandwich?
Possibly.
Or a ham wallet?
Ham wallet.
It might find its way into one every now and then. But yes, my skin flute is my proboscis, my lap sausage, my
you know, I don't think it
my
qualifies
twig
as a proboscis.
I think that's your nose, actually,
yeah.
Is a proboscis.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, he says he's a skin flint. I'm sorry about that. I feel sorry for his wife, I guess. I don't really know what the fuck a skin flint is. But
does it have some kind of weird, you know, combination of Mr. Skin
I'm asking,
and Larry Flint?
Maybe Dewey would just go define colon skin flint, you know, and maybe get something from Urban Dictionary. Or
well,
something.
The real answer is that it's a cheapskate, but I'm looking for something much funnier than that.
Oh, it's a cheapskate?
Yeah.
A skin flint?
I don't know.
What the fuck does that, what the hell, how does that mean cheap? I don't get that at all.
You got-bellied codpiece.
Isn't that what Cameo used to wear in all the videos for Word Up and stuff?
Might be.
All right, I'm a skin flint. So Nate's apparently a foreskin or something. So I called my cable company to see if there were any lower cost options. Oh, you're right. Yeah, okay, here we go. So I called my cable company to see if there were any lower cost options to the service I had. They did have a cheaper option that was 256 kilobits up and down. By the way, they weren't thrilled about telling me that this option even existed. So the question here is 256 up and down enough? Yeah, I know that it depends on what I want it for. So let's say typical web surfing, the occasional 20 meg Dialadork podcast download, and a daily 5 meg upload. Is 256 an option? If I'm willing to suffer a little bit, will it just drive me crazy? I think it's going to drive you fucking crazy. That's well, pretty fucking slow, I think.
I think it's a short drive.
Yeah, I think it's I think
a short drive,
yeah, short drive for Nate to crazy. I'm pretty sure that that is going to really madden you. That's only five times as fast as a dial-up modem, really.
Was it? I hope it was 256K, not 256 bit.
Well, it says KB.
Yeah, kilobit. That's fine. Yeah, well, 256K isn't all that bad.
Kilobit, not kilobyte. 256 kilobyte would
well,
be 2 megabit.
If it's...
A bit is 1/8 of a byte.
Well, yeah, I know that.
So, you know, 256 kilobit is 2 megabyte. That's fast. That's plenty fast. That's super fast. That's faster than T1. I think he's talking about 256 kilobit, which is 5 times the speed of a dial-up modem with a perfect
I think that's
signal.
Usually how bandwidth is measured, is in kilobits.
So I think he's going to be really unhappy with... 256 kilobit. I mean, I think downloading a 20 meg file could take you know, an hour or more.
But I don't think he'd be I don't think he'd be frustrated or unhappy with normal browsing.
No, normal browsing would be.
I think it'd be fine.
If he's the only one doing it.
It's him and his wife, and you know.
Well, if they have
some sprogs that aren't old enough to do this stuff yet.
Sprogs.
Sprogs.
It's British for kid. You know, so if he can withstand the the waiting or plan accordingly, you know, queue up some downloads and go away, then, you know, go for it. The straight answer is we're getting raped by cable companies on how much we're paying for this shit anyway.
You know, I think the cable companies are expensive. I mean, DSL has come way, 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 way down exactly. in price. Way down. I mean, like, you can get it. If you're a new customer now with, like, you know, Yahoo, SBC, or whatever, it's like $12.99.
I think that's the deal he's got, but it won't stay connected. So, I mean, it's great that it's cheap, but it won't stay connected.
His DSL won't stay connected?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say that in the he didn't say that in the email.
Well, does he have to say everything in the email?
Well, yes. How the hell am I supposed to know?
He didn't say that he likes to walk around on stilts in his backyard.
He
but
does?
He does. You didn't know that about him?
About Nate Allen.
Yeah, he cleans the gutters. He gets up on some stilts and he cleans the gutters.
Does he have, like, the super high-tech stilts that, like, are just, like...
They're like carbon fiber.
Nice.
Yeah, carbon fiber stilts.
God.
Yeah.
You know...
He can run on them, too.
He is...
He's a very talented individual.
Yeah, he is.
He Well, I'll tell you this much. He has too much money.
What?
Because he's got carbon fiber stilts.
Well, he spent it all on the stilts. He can't afford a fast internet.
Okay. Well, that's amazing. You'll go out and get carbon fiber stilts, and you won't fucking, you know, belly up to the bar for a decent internet connection. Look,
listen.
What can you do? Get the lowers. If you really want to save the $20 a month or whatever it is, get the slower one and put up with it. I mean, you'll be able to do everything you need to do. The upload and the download is going to be...
just fine.
Well, you know what? The upload's not going to be that bad.
No.
It's not going to be that much different from what a lot of people get if it's 256 up, truly. But 256 down, I think you'll find is pretty friggin' slow. And you're especially when you're downloading a 20 meg Dialadork file.
Well, and you can always download those at work and then transfer them.
Brilliant.
Hey, I've got some more stuff here. I've got some YWOWs. I've got Flare. I've got a Tale from the Dork Side. I got a Fatwa, but we're already at an hour. So maybe I should just do the YWOWs and we'll call it a day. Okay. And I'll save the Flare and the other shit.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
Okay, so I've got some interesting pieces of Flare and then a Tale that goes with them.
For next
and
week.
And then a Fatwa that goes with that, and then free software that goes with that. So I've got
beautiful.
I've got a whole it's kind of like a lamp stack of topics.
Brilliant.
But it's more
come on, don't work through the acronym.
All right, I'm not just I'll have to backronym it. I'll backronym it. It's a fuck stack. Okay. All right. Basically, I got a couple of YWOWs here. We got three of them, actually. I think you'll like this. We talked about sports earlier, so why don't you venture over to whatifsports.com, and you can perform simulated games between famous, you know, teams of antiquity, or maybe you can even put teams together. I don't know if there's – it looks like there's leagues and all kinds of things. So you can simulate – sporting events you want to play, you know, the 1948 Indians against the 1995 Indians, you know, or something crazy like that. If you want to play the 76 Steelers versus last year's Steelers, if you're that kind of scuzz bucket. Or, you know, you could play the, like I might play the 90-91 Redskins, you know, versus take on all comers. I'd like to see them against the 85 Bears. I think it would be skins all the way. The Bears. Anyway, so that's pretty cool, actually. It's actually really, really cool. And maybe next week we'll do a couple of crazy things. Like maybe we'll play the 1903 Washington Senators against – forget it.
Against the question Jamaican bobsled team.
Yeah, I'd like to go again. I'd like to go different sports.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd like to play the 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers against the 1977 Cincinnati Bengals. In cricket. Forget it. All right, so that's a pretty cool site. One place also, by the way, that I really found was really, really cool, because like a lot of places like Experts Exchange, which I think was that one of the unfortunate URLs that we documented one week?
Why was it unfortunate? I don't remember.
No, there's a couple of them that were. Remember those that were really funny?
Like Penn Island.
Yeah, Penn Island. Yeah, like penis land.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Well, anyway, this if you go to like Expert Exchange or you know, some of these other great sites that have these, you know, fantastic, you know, forums and dialogues and things about how to solve particular computing problems. I mean, they're really amazing sites, and they have just phenomenal advice over there. And people over there are just experts at finding, like, just the right, you know, knowledge base article, you know, or whatever, or how to fix things. And it's amazing, but you have to pay.
Yes, and that drives me nuts.
But there is, but, you know, like, Expert Exchange is cool because you can get the first one you look at, and you can see the whole article, and then they realize, then they, like, say, no, 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 now you got to pay. So then you just, like, you know, delete all your cookies and you can go back and do it again and again and again and again. But there, I found a place called TACTECH, TACKTECH.com. And I found a really fantastic how-to about, like, making bootable Windows installation CDs and slipstreaming and doing all kinds of stuff. And it was cool because you could read an article, and then at the top they say this article's been replaced by this newer, better article. You know, and you can kind of follow the progression, and inside the articles they have links to other articles that you need. So inside the making a bootable CD article was a link to the slipstreaming article and all kinds of stuff. It was pretty cool. So I really liked what I found over there.
That does sound interesting.
And then also for the sports fan, there I found a really kind of ugly looking website that it's kind of a neat idea though. It's called johnnyroadtrip.com. J-O-H-N-N-Y roadtrip.com. And it's really kind of an interesting little website that has, like, all the sports teams and all their schedules and tailgating info and stadium info and all this stuff. So it'll help you plan out your sort of sports-themed road trip. And it's kind of neat.
You know, I've always wanted to do the training camp road trips that are nearby here. Roll on over to what's the little city that Steelers practice at near Old Latrobe Brewing Company.
What? I don't actually know what the...
Yeah, the Steelers do their training at some city that's a little town that's not too far outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I know the Redskins used to go to Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, there you go.
It was just some, you know, weird little town right by a little college, and like every summer or whatever, the Redskins would descend on this little town, and it would just be wild times over there. Yeah.
Latrobe, Pennsylvania?
Is it Latrobe? Okay.
That's what the...
I think the brewery is the Old Latrobe.
Yeah, it is. The brewery is Old Latrobe. And that, they make Rolling Rock.
Rolling Rock, that's it.
Come on, that's a classic. Any college
okay.
student
in, all right,
in, the, in the Midwestern tri-state area has had Rolling Rock.
Sure.
I'd wager they're probably all over the nation. But anyway.
I was in the grocery store the other day, and guy was checking out with like a $15 bottle of red wine and a 12-pack of Iron City Light.
Iron shitty.
In cans. I was like, wow, that's just weird. But yeah, this is pretty cool. Johnny Road Trip is kind of interesting. And
that's, I'll have to check that out. That might be
interesting. Yeah, it's got all like, you know, the team schedules and all kinds of various things. So if you're kind of crazy like that, it's might be a pretty invaluable resource. So that kind of does it for me in terms of why wows and stuff. Since we're not going to do the other stuff, it might take a little while.
Well, let's
just wrap this up because then we can go watch the end of the Cavs game.
Let's close shop here.
All right. Well, look, this was great. Look, if you have any comments or questions about tonight's show or about next week's show, please email them to dorks@dialadork.com. dorks@dialadork.com. Hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com. Visit our website. Visit our cafe press store. Buy a t-shirt. The music, I'll take care of the music. Thank you very much. Anyway, fellas, any last words?
The show notes are up.
Show notes are up already. Hopefully,
dialadork.com.
I'll have the show posted tomorrow as well.
Please, as always, practice safe browsing.
Please practice safe browsing. And thanks very much for listening.
Tonight's show brought to you by Unibrow Brewery of Quebec, Canada.
Makers
and
of
their
Maudite.
Fabulous Maudite beers.
The beers that make Matt Menard mellifluous.
That was really nice transliteration.
I think it does mean he has to fart. All right. Anyway, thanks anyway, very much for listening. We'll see ya.
You get all those pimps together. It was live.